Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to be talking about something today we just got to talk about, and now is the right time. We're going to be talking about Banned Books Week. And perhaps you've been in a bookstore or a library. You've seen the signs, the slogans. Your kids have probably been handed flyers or at least told about Banned Books Week in school, especially in the public schools. If you've walked into a retail bookstore, you're likely to see a display of supposedly banned books, you know, The Diary of Anne Frank, Mark Twain's Huck Finn. You go and look at all that. Okay, here's the bottom line. Where are these books being banned? If there is a crisis of banned books in the United States, I want to know where it is. I want to know where they're banned. And as you look at this further, I want to tell you what they're really talking about. They're talking about you, parents. They're talking about you making decisions about what your children should and should not read. You are the ones who are being accused of banning books. You know, when you think about banning books, I think about the Soviet Union. I think about communist China. News story just recently I read in the last 24 hours about how bookstores in Hong Kong are carrying books about China that are not allowed on the mainland. I'd like to know, where are these books that are not allowed? Where is a book right now that is being banned? And I'd just like to know, what are we really talking about here? Because this is not the Soviet Union. It doesn't even exist anymore. This is not the People's Republic of China. This isn't Cuba. This is not the Islamic world where there is are any number of books that simply will not make it into print or into sale. This is the United States of America. And while we're talking about banned books, I'd just like to know, what are we really talking about? Is this really a threat? If so, well, let's talk about it. I think it's a threat all right, by the way. I think it's a threat of intimidation to America's parents. And I think it's a tremendous propaganda victory for people who have some very clear ideas of their own about what your children should or should not be reading. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We're going to be talking about this issue, not only in terms of the propaganda effort here for Banned Books Week. We're going to be talking about what parents should be thinking about in terms of making decisions of what your children read or do not read. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's get to that conversation. I'm also glad to hear from you as you have an opportunity to email us. Just write us at mail@albertmohler.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Albert Mohler and /Mohler Radio, and at Facebook, the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to get to that topic in just a moment. First, a review of some other issues in the news. The whole issue of homosexuals in the military is back. And the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, has written an article that appears in the Joint Force Quarterly that says, and I quote, "After careful examination, there is no scientific evidence to support the claim that unit cohesion will be negatively affected if homosexuals serve openly." According to this report from the New York Times, the article, which is by an Air Force colonel, carries no weight as a matter of policy, but it may signal a shift in the official winds. I need to say that it was reviewed. The article was not written by Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It was reviewed by his office and was allowed into publication. And when you look at this, you all of a sudden recognize that an argument is being made. And that argument that is being made is that evidently there is no scientific evidence, I love the way this is written, to support the claim that unit cohesion will be negatively affected. What kind of science? This is one of those statements that should lead you to ask the question, all right, what kind of scientific evidence could be provided? What are we really looking at there? You know, when you start talking about gays in the military, let's just go back and revisit this situation. Back when President Bill Clinton was first inaugurated in 1993, he attempted to remove all strictures against homosexuals, openly living homosexuals, serving in the military. The Joint Chiefs of Staff and others put pressure on him not to do that. He backed off and came up with the don't ask, don't tell policy. Right now, if you do ask and you do tell, the military, well, supposedly is obligated to act upon the Code of Military Conduct, but now there are efforts to normalize homosexuality and those who are openly homosexual serving in the armed services. And it appears that what we have is now a weakening of the resolve of those in the leadership of the armed forces to resist that policy. But I really find it interesting that as there are those in the official military now calling for repealing of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell law, it's really, really interesting that they're talking about scientific evidence. I don't think this is an issue where scientific evidence is the most important evidence. It just shows you also how in today's hypermodern society, just as one dimension of what the modern world looks like and how the modern world talks and how it reasons, if you can shift the debate from morality to science, from moral principles to statistics, if you can shift the conversation from a conversation about morals to a conversation about charts and graphs, you can win some real victories. And I think that's exactly the attempt that is represented here. Speaking of moral issues, we've been reporting these research projects out of the Pew Research Center for the People in the Press, showing that for the first time, there is a majority of Americans who are pro-life in some form. When they have the two alternatives, pro-life or pro-abortion, you could phrase it as the pro-abortion movement does, pro-life or pro-choice, you find that for the first time there are more pro-life Americans. There is a majority now. And now a report that came out just today, jointly with the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life, a sampling of some 4,000 adults demonstrated that that is holding, that there is less support for abortion. Just to read to you from this report from Religion News Service, researchers found a broad range of Americans with significantly less support for abortion, including white mainline Protestants and white Roman Catholics. So those are core constituencies that the pro-abortion movement has counted on. And if there is a weakening there, well, you can count on the fact that there is some real weakening. And I am so heartened to read that. This is one of those happy things that can kind of cross your mind to think that on an issue that's been around for that length of time, and just let me remind you that when Roe v. Wade was handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1973, the pro-abortion side was absolutely certain that that would end the debate, that that would end the issue, that Americans would just accept Roe v. Wade and the reality of abortion on demand and move on to other issues. And while there are many things to lament about the distracted moral consciousness of the American people, I have to tell you, the fact that more Americans now are concerned about abortion, are mobilized about abortion, are coming to the right conclusions about abortion in 2009 than even in 1973, that tells you something about the fact that not all hope is lost. Speaking of hope, we have to hold out hope for those who are suffering in the Pacific area from those two earthquakes, one of them underground, underwater, that led to the tsunami affecting the Samoan Islands, and the other one very much above the ground in Indonesia. Very interesting thing that happened in such close proximity to each other, but as we now know, these two earthquakes, according to the scientists, were unconnected. It was simply an accident, a coincidence, according to geologists, that they happened at the same time. Now, the Wall Street Journal has published a very interesting map of major earthquakes in this area, going all the way from the Samoan Islands up to Japan. And to look at it is to be reminded that this same area, which is often referred to as a ring of fire because of violent volcanic activity, is also a ring of earthquakes. The death toll is rising, and right now we know that at least 119 persons were killed in the Samoan region from the tsunami. The water is now known to have exceeded 16 to 20 feet as it came into both American Samoa and the other Samoan islands. And now the death toll in the whole area of Indonesia affected by this, it could be far, far higher. And they found at least 200 bodies as of this morning, and there are warnings coming to us of thousands that are likely trapped within the rubble. It is not known at present whether they are dead or alive. We need to be praying for those folks there in Indonesia and those in Samoa. Rescue efforts are ongoing, and disaster relief teams are headed there to those two very crucially affected areas. Folks, just think about this for a moment. One of the things we take for granted virtually every hour of every day is the stability of the ground on which we walk. We tend not to worry about that ground shifting under our feet. We tend to talk about wanting to stand on solid ground. Our language, our metaphors, our expressions make very clear that we take for granted that the earth is a stable, firm, very safe environment. But this is a reminder to us that in a fallen world, the earth itself, according to Genesis 3, shows the effects of sin. All the creation, Paul tells us in Romans chapter 8, is groaning under the weight of sin. And this is another reminder to us that the effects of sin are such that the ground under our feet, in reality, is never as stable as we think it is. Most of these little tremors are undetected by our feet, but you can't deny the devastating effect of these earthquakes when they come. Think about that as we pray for those in the Samoan Islands and also in Indonesia. The topic for today's conversation is banned books in America. Who's doing the banning, and what's Banned Book Week really all about? We're going to talk about that when we come back. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Here's a little hint. Parents, you're in the center of the target of this one. The number is 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back with your calls.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The displays, the signs, this stuff is pretty much ubiquitous. You'll find it everywhere. And it has to do with Banned Books Week 2009. Every year this rolls around, we're kind of accustomed to seeing it. You walk in your local Borders or Barnes & Noble, you just might see a big display of banned books. You walk into your local independent bookseller, probably even a higher suggestion that you're going to find such a display. You walk into your public library or a school library. The American Library Association's all over this, folks. Banned Book Week. Now, let's just talk about banned books for a moment. There are books that have been banned. And by banned, that meant it could be illegal to have it. It could be illegal to sell it. It could be almost impossible to obtain it. A banned book might be the kind of book that that would get you censored, thrown out of school, thrown out of the community, cast out of the castle for having it. It could be a book where, you know, the publisher is in danger of being imprisoned or losing his business for publishing it or releasing it. It could be the kind of thing where you have officers of the law come into a bookstore and take them out and forcibly grab the inventory and shred it and burn it. Well, just to state the obvious, that can't be what we're talking about here, because that doesn't happen. And I guarantee if that did happen, you'd hear about it immediately. It would be front page news. What they're talking about here is just about any time anyone suggests that any book shouldn't be in anyone's hands. And that includes parents. Banned Book Week 2009. Well, in the materials that are provided in the map of censorship put out by the American Library Association, known as Books and Book Bans and Challenges 2007-2009. By the way, that's a 2 or 3 year period, depending on how they're dating it. There were 186 cases. Of the 186 cases, only 10% involved any actual removal from a library. From individual classrooms where students are studying, only 16%. And let me just point out, that isn't banning a book. For a book to be banned, you would have to find it difficult to obtain. So if you have to go from one bookstore to another, or from one library to another, or you have to actually go online and buy it, that's not, folks, a banned book. What they're really talking about here are parents. In case you wondered, there is a major poster known as the Manifesto that is the official statement for Banned Books Week, September 26th through October 3rd, 2009. In the ad that is paid for by Simon & Schuster Children's Publishing and Margaret K. McElderry Books, you'll see their thing here, just as they put their names at the bottom of this. It includes a poem by Ellen Hopkins, the best-selling author of a book, Crank, and another newly published book, Tricks. You say you're afraid for your children, the poem goes. Innocence ripe for corruption by perversion or sorcery on the page. But sticks and stones do break bones, and ignorance is no armor. You do not speak for me, and will not deny my kids magic in favor of miracles. Wow. Do you detect a little anti-Christian bias there? Magic instead of miracles? Well, I don't know. I will tell you this. No one is in danger in this country of actually having a book banned. You can't even have laws that in any significant way restrict obscenity or pornography. And yet, Banned Book Week, it's a great propaganda victory. The phone number is 877-893-8255. I wish parents would think about this, be alert to this, and weigh in on this. Otherwise, we're becoming complicit in this effort. The phone number is 877-893-8255. From Orlando, Florida, Seth's on the line, listening to WHIM. Go ahead, Seth.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was just going to comment on Huck Finn. Schools have actually banned it because of the racial language they say.
Yeah, let me just take one issue with what you said, Seth. I really appreciate your call. You said schools have banned it. And let me just point out that this is the way those who are pushing this kind of agenda really make their point. You know, schools, by taking one book out of the curriculum and replacing it with another book, I don't think it's right to say they're banning the book. Banning the book means you can't have the book. You're going to throw out of school if you have the book. You hold the book, you read the book, you better be quiet about the book. You try to sell the book, you're going to get some kind of sanction for trying to sell it. And I do think it's a shame, by the way, let me just be on the record, for forbidding children to read Mark Twain's Huck Finn. I think it's a very important part of American literature. And so if there is an effort to change the curriculum for political correctness, I'm willing to speak to that and speak against it. I want to speak to the availability of Huck Finn. And, you know, Seth, you're exactly right. The reason why in many school districts it has become controversial is because of racial language in it. And there is horrible racial language in it. There is a word. I'm not even going to use the first initial of it. There is a derogatory word for African Americans that is used in the book. But it is a book that was written in the 19th century, and it is a book about one boy's transformative discovery of the fact that this man, Jim, is actually a human being, and that he's being mistreated, and that he deserves to be treated as a human being. And so from a racial prejudice perspective, the book is actually one of the great high watermarks in the 19th century of a transformative understanding of race. But it would be like, for instance, I hear parents sometimes say about this book or that book, especially about, say, a book where there's combat, where there's some kind of rough language. Well, you know, that probably is a truthful rendering, whether it's a biography or a history book, of what was said. And, you know, that's informative and important. But I still want to say parents should have the right, fundamentally, to have a big say in terms of what their children are reading. When it comes to controversial literature, well, that's where we really need to talk about the rights of parents to be parents. The phone number is 877-893-8255. You know, it's interesting, the first call we had from Seth was about Huck Finn, because when a lot of people think about banned books, they immediately go to books of perhaps more contemporary controversy. But that's a reminder to us that the classics are under attack by those who would dismiss them for one reason or another. But as much as we could have a debate over where the curriculum should direct children to read, you know, taking a book out of the curriculum and putting another book in, that isn't banning a book. That's just propaganda. Banning a book would mean you can't buy Huck Finn. I guarantee you right now in your community, if you live in a community of any size, I mean, all kinds of places you can buy Huck Finn. And if you still can't find it, go online. You're going to find lots of people who will be eager to sell you Huck Finn. And it just isn't a banned book. The agenda behind this is clear in this poster. You say you're afraid for your children. Innocence ripe for corruption by perversion or sorcery on the page. But sticks and stones do break bones, and ignorance is no armor. You do not speak for me and will not deny my kids magic in favor of miracles. Here's another paragraph. You say you're afraid for God, the living word eroded by Muhammad and Darwin and Magdalene. But the omnipotent sculptor of heaven and earth designed intelligence. Surely you dare not speak for the Father who opens his arms to all. Well, that's just pure propaganda. Pure propaganda. And incendiary propaganda. And yet, evidently, at least one publisher, Simon & Schuster Children's Publishing, and another, Margaret K. McElderry Books, thought that was important enough they put their name on it. Well, what they're trying to do is sell books. And, you know, by claiming that someone is trying to ban them, you just might get some publicity for your book in order to sell them. But if you are able to sell them, here's a little hint. They're not banned. You know, the big issue here has to do especially with public libraries, where parents have complained about the open availability of books that are subversive of their own commitments and worldview. Now, as much as I think there's some important discussions to be held there, I want to say that when you consider what's really going on here, I think this is where parents need to go in with kids and make informed decisions about which books they read and take home. But for that matter, you better be careful as to which books they pick up and open and view. We'll be right back. Phone number is 877-893-8255.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're discussing Banned Book Week 2009. Let me read to you again from the manifesto. It's written by Ellen Hopkins. It's in the poster put out by publishers and others supporting the American Library Association's Banned Book Week 2009. And by the way, we're in it. You say you're afraid for children, innocence ripe for corruption by perversion or sorcery on the page, but sticks and stones do break bones, and ignorance is no armor. Just think of those words, ignorance is no armor. You do not speak for me, you will not deny my kids' magic in favor of miracles. On the website of the American Library Association, under Frequently Asked Questions, here's a question. Can't parents tell the librarian what material they don't think children should have? And as the manifesto makes really clear, the answer to that is no. Mitchell Munsey, writing in the Wall Street Journal, asked this question. He says, is Banned Book Week a celebration of free speech, or is it a way for government employees, that is librarians, I would add, to bully ordinary citizens by stigmatizing those who complain, calling them bigots, false patriots, screamers, burners? They clearly hope, writes Mr. Munsey, that future challenges simply won't be brought. Very, very, very interesting. One of the principles of the American Library Association is that librarians, professional librarians, are the people who get to decide what books are in libraries and what books are age-appropriate, and not parents. In other words, paid professionals are going to decide what books are appropriate for your children, not you. And if you are not concerned about that, I don't know how to make you concerned. Now, from the list at the American Library Association of frequently challenged books of 2008, here are the books. Number one was the book, And Tango Makes Three. We talked about that on this program. It has to do with a very pro-homosexual agenda. Parents said it was unsuited to the age group. The ALA denied that claim. The His Dark Materials trilogy by Philip Pullman. Boy, we've talked about that on this program. Reasons, according to the website, it was protested were political viewpoint, religious viewpoint, and violence. Now, again, are people supposedly calling for these books not to be printed, published, and made available in bookstores? No. This is about libraries where children have access to the books. Number three, the books TTYL, TTFN. This is all, obviously text speak. It's hard to read over the air because it only makes sense if you're looking at it. The books are by Lauren Miracle. The reasons were offensive language, sexually explicit, unsuited to age group. The Scary Story series by Alvin Schwartz, Occultism, Satanism, Religious Viewpoint, and Violence. Bless Me Ultima by Rudolfo Anaya. Reasons, occult, Satanism, offensive language, sexually explicit, violence, religious viewpoint. The Perks of Being a Wallflower by Stephen Chbosky. Drugs, homosexuality, nudity, offensive language, sexually explicit, suicide, unsuited to age group. Gossip Girl, again, unsuited to age group. Uncle Bobby's Wedding, homosexuality, unsuited to age group. The Kite Runner, offensive language, sexually explicit, unsuited to age group. Flashcards of My Life, sexually explicit, unsuited to age group. Now, if you'll notice, the words unsuited to age group came up again and again and again. And the claim is being made by these librarians that they are the ones who are professionally trained to know what is and is not suitable for age group, not parents. And again, they asked the question on their own website, should parents be allowed to tell librarians what materials they do not want their children to read? And the answer is, basically no. Not if it comes to what's going to be available openly in the library. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I want to come back to the bottom line in all of this. I'd like to know who can claim with a straight face that these books are banned. When you actually look at the material, you even look at the website, and you read what is written here, these aren't banned books. These books are available in virtually any bookstore. They're openly available out on tables in the bookstores I've visited in the last few days. I've seen at least some of these titles. They are not criminalized. No one is being arrested for having written them or bought them or having sold them. No one is under threat of any censorship. No government authority has gone into the publisher and said, black out these words, take out this section. This is not honest when talking about claims of banned books. This is really about intimidating parents. I want you to know about this, folks, because I think it's very, very important that the parents of this country, and Christian parents in particular, understand that there is an agenda here. and the goal is to reach the minds of our children. Now, I would have questions about whether or not Christian parents are actually thinking through what they do and do not want their children to read. I hope so, but I have to tell you, I think too many parents are simply asleep at the switch, and someone else is doing the filtering, someone else is doing the deciding, someone else is providing the oversight. And if you are unaware of the kind of agenda that is behind this, well, you need to be very much aware that you are the one, as parents, who are front and center in the target of this kind of effort. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Back with your calls on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back. The American Library Association says that Banned Books Week is important, quote, to draw attention to the danger that exists when restraints are imposed on the availability of information in a free society. Just listen to that again. To draw attention to the danger that exists when restraints are imposed on the availability of information in a free society. I want you to hold that thought and listen to this call. Let's go to Carrie calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Carrie.
Yes, Dr. Mueller. I just had a comment as a high school school teacher in the Louisville, Kentucky area. I was trying to get a book into our library for our students, and the book was Lee Strobel's The Case for Christ, and a librarian denied that since it had a religious philosophy behind it. Even though we have a lot of other philosophies and books and things that are in the library, and I even offered to even pay to put those in there, and still wouldn't put those in the library for high school students.
All right, just let me ask you a question, Carrie. Were you then the victim of a book banning?
I think in the high school level, I was the victim of a book banning.
Well, you know, I want to fall back on the same language that I used earlier to say that I'm thankful that Lee Strobel's book, The Case for Christ, is available in America, and it's not criminally banned. It's available in local bookstores. It has sold by the thousands of copies. And by the way, Carrie, good instinct to get that in the hands of young people. That's one of the books that my wife and I frequently give for high school graduation or other occasions. It's a very accessible book written by a Christian former news reporter who actually knows very well how to communicate with people about how he came to know Christ and the evidence for Christ, the case for Christ. But, Carrie, I think in your case, what you helped to demonstrate is that everyone restricts certain ideas from certain people for certain reasons. Everyone restricts certain ideas, certain content. Everyone prioritizes certain books over others. I'm very disappointed at your report, Carrie. And I think it shows a secularist bias that's at the very heart of many of those making these decisions. But I want to tell you, my main point in raising this with you right now is to say that the incident you just related, which I could have repeated by other callers over and over again, is a demonstration that the American Library Association actually doesn't believe what they write. They actually don't believe, let me just read to you, this is from their website, their press release about Banned Books Week 2009, fresh off the press. They say that this week is very important to draw attention to the danger that exists when restraints are imposed upon the availability of information. Well, Carrie just told us that a restraint was imposed by a librarian. I thought, according to the American Library Association, librarians are the ones who are opposed to any restraint on the availability of information. Well, it all depends on what information it is. Carrie, thank you. Your call is invaluable. I appreciate so much the point. I'm glad you're in the schools. And, you know, folks, I hope parents are listening carefully to that. A couple of principles I wish you to keep in mind. Number one, it is very important that Christians not be book burners. We need to be the people who teach how to be discerning and who understand the power of words, the power of texts, the power of books. But the problem is, once we give in to banning and burning books, well, our books could be the next to be banned and burned. And it's just a matter of principle. That if we want the freedom to talk about the gospel of Christ and to publish Christian materials and to be on the airwaves and to do what we must do in service to the Great Commission and in ways of glorifying God by means of what we write, what we publish, and getting it out, handing out literature, Christian literature, publishing Bibles and handing them out. If that is our aim, and it should be a central part of our ministry in this literate age, we have to recognize that people are going to be publishing things we do not like and with which we do not agree. People are going to publish material that will be offensive to us, even as the Bible is offensive to people, and they're not going to be reluctant to tell us so. But when you start talking about banning books, let's be honest, folks. We're not talking about banning books here. We're talking about discernment. The very discernment that I think is the Christian responsibility, especially the responsibility of parents, that's the discernment that is directly targeted by Banned Book Week. And when you start looking at this, you recognize, well, everybody has to make choices about what to read and what not to read. I mean, librarians are making choices about what's in the library and what's not in the library. What they're really talking about is their freedom to make those decisions and to be free from the interference of citizens and parents. And just to look at the books I read from 2008, the top 10 list, I guarantee you that most parents would be aghast that their children be reading these books, and yet these are the very books that are being celebrated. And if you look at it, you recognize that those who are doing the celebrating have a very clear agenda. Many of these books have to do with homosexuality, with normalizing homosexuality, with normalizing plural kinds of shall we say, parenting arrangements. You know, one of the statements that's made on here, that, by the way, is that we are living in a very diverse culture, even a multi-gendered culture. Just imagine that, a multi-gendered culture. And that's being stated as a part of the reason why we need to have Banned Books Week, in order to make certain that those books are not out of the hands of anyone. But at the same time, those same librarians are making decisions to keep out other books, as we just heard. And when you start looking at this, you realize, okay, a little honesty would go a long way here. The real issue is, who's the decider? Who's the decider about what's included in the curriculum in a course? Who's the decider about what's included in a school library? Who's the decider about what's included in a list of suggested books? Who's making the choice about what's being carried in the local retail bookstore? Who's the decider? And then fundamentally, who's the decider for your children? You know, rather than seeking to curtail the availability of books, I would suggest the most important thing Christians can do is to teach our children how they should read and what they should read. And parents, this means that you need to take on a role in which you are exercising your God-given responsibility of discernment by restricting what your children read until you believe they are ready to read it, or keeping it out of their hands and away from their eyes because you know that it's not unsuitable just for one age, but unsuitable, period, because of its content, because of its worldview, because of its presentation. You know, the whole experience of reading is a way of opening the eyes and opening the heart and opening the mind. You need to realize there are those that wish to open the eyes and the hearts and the minds of your children in order to get their message in them. You need to be unashamed as parents by saying, wait just a minute. That's why I'm here, and that's the job God gave me. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. By the way, just one last word about the American Library Association and Banned Books Week for 2009. You go to the website for the ALA and look at the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgendered Roundtable of the ALA. It states as one of its purposes, and I read here, to work towards, I want to get this exactly right, to develop, promote, and defend unrestricted access of all library users to information by or about gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people. Let me read that again. To develop, promote, and defend unrestricted access of all library users to information by or about gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people. Well, let me just be clear that when you write it this way, you mean what you say. Unrestricted access for all library users. That means any effort to say that anyone is too young or that it's inappropriate for any age, it's just wrong. And so, parent, you're being identified as one who is wrong to seek to restrict that. Just keep that in mind. And understand that when you go into the public library, you're going into to institutions that have been great repositories and assets for the American people. But now the culture war, the battle for the minds, the battle for hearts, the battle for the spiritual lives of people is very much in play the moment you walk into a library or a bookstore, or for that matter, probably your local grocery store. Just far more apparent right up front in a library. Today in Beijing and throughout China, they're celebrating the 60th anniversary of Mao's establishment of the People's Republic of China back in 1949. Interesting news coverage, massive demonstrations and parties. We talked about it a bit earlier in the week. Very interesting. The New York Times has an article out showing that the Chinese government's really abandoning all ideology. It traded ideology for a pragmatic communist adaptation to promise to overcome poverty and bring wealth to the Chinese people. Very, very interesting. The party is doing a pretty good job of running the country, so we're pretty happy with it, said Li Jiquan, a student at Capital Sports University. He said this, but what we love is this country, and loving this country is a very different thing from loving the party. He paused long enough to have second thoughts, quote, but don't write that I don't love the party, he added. Okay? So what we have here is a communist country with a market economy to promise an escape from poverty. And the Chinese government has adapted incredibly over the last three decades to a market economy, but it is still a communist government. It is still a one-party system. And the celebration going on in Beijing right now is for a regime that should in its history be counted as murdering tens and potentially hundreds of millions of its own citizens. We need to pray that true freedom will come to the people of China. And at the top of those freedoms, true religious liberty as well. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.